Next, we turn to the internet. The debate over how free and open the internet should be has been raging for a few years now. Last week, the Federal Communications Commission weighed in with its latest proposal, which lays out a plan to create a so-called internet fast lane. The proposal is controversial, to say the least. Internet service providers, or ISPs, want the ability to maximize profits on their significant infrastructure investments. While on the other side, many of those who argue that the internet should remain free and open to everyone are concerned that these new regulations could fundamentally alter the way the internet functions in our daily lives. With me now by phone from Toronto to help us understand the latest in the net neutrality debate is Jonathan Obar. Jonathan's an MSU visiting professor here who joins us. He's affiliated with Michigan State University. He's the associate director of the university's Quello Center for Telecommunication Management and Law. Welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me on.
Just break down the debate just a little bit more for us. What's at the heart of this debate about net neutrality?
Sure. Well, first of all, the network neutrality debate, when you read about it in the paper, see people talking about it on TV, it can be perceived as a highly technical discussion about how the internet operates. There's a lot of jargon being used all the time. But at its heart, it's a debate about the future of the internet, a debate that anyone and everyone who uses the internet really should care about. And the FCC's eventual decision could have huge implications for the relationship between what we call the internet haves and have-nots. So I hope that this is an issue that your listeners really care about, because it really affects all of us as more and more of our lives are being lived online. It's about asking ourselves, what type of internet do we want? As you said, should we have a truly open internet, an internet where what we call barriers to entry are low, young entrepreneurs are able to create websites and apps that easily connect to the global marketplace where anyone can try them out and anyone can compete with established companies. And of course, that's just in the commercial sphere. What about the political and social space, right? Should we have an internet where anyone can start a blog and compete in the marketplace of ideas, where anyone can organize a group on Facebook, etc.? On the other end of the spectrum, do we want an internet that operates more like our traditional media industries? There's this famous quote A.J. Liebling has, where he says, freedom of the press belongs to those who own one, who can afford one, right? So there's a lot of fear out there that with a loss of network neutrality, that we could be moving towards a commercial space, a political space, a social space that is reflected more in the traditional media sphere. So that's really at the heart of this debate. And that's really two extremes, I would say. Another point to consider that's a big part of all of this, why this whole debate started, is because the internet is very expensive to maintain and to make sure that we have the fast speeds that we want, that we have the access that we want. So the companies that provide us with that access, that spend the money to make sure that we can, you know, just plug in and play, they've invested a lot of money, and they want to make sure that they can continue making money as well as continue providing us with that great service. So the debate over network neutrality becomes a debate over what we call network management, which is the idea that these companies want to be able to decide, have more control over the internet so that they can make more money, essentially. So the debate becomes, should we let these companies do that or not, to what degree, that sort of thing.
Lots of implications there, really well explained. Jonathan, back up just a bit, though, and describe for us what this fast lane would do. Just in practical user terms, what would that mean?
Okay, so it's about understanding what this network management concept means. So network neutrality is, that's the term that gets used all the time. It's like a theoretical ideal. Network neutrality refers to the idea that when you have a network and you have people who operate that network and give access to that network, they can't decide who gets access to the network, at what speed, and that sort of thing. The classic analogy, we're talking about the internet, but the classic analogy is to the plugging appliances into the electric system. The electric company can't say, Well, you own a GE microwave, so that'll work. But if you own a different company's microwave, it's not going to work. And then, well, okay, you have a GE microwave, but if you want to microwave Campbell's, a bowl of Campbell's soup, that will work. But whatever, you know, I don't know what another type of soup, yeah, Healthy Choice or something, right? That won't work. I mean, this is sort of ludicrous when people think about it, right? The electrical company shouldn't be able to determine what type of soup I'm going to have for dinner. But that's essentially what we're talking about here with the network neutrality debate and forms of network management. Internet service providers want to be able to impose business models on the internet that allow them to basically profit by deciding what types of devices get access to the internet and which ones don't, and at the same time, what type of content does and what type of content doesn't. So one business model that they use is what's called tiered pricing. So this is the idea that the internet service providers, so like Comcast, would say, because at the moment they can't say to one company, you have to pay us extra to have fast service. It's basically just, you know, you pay for access, that sort of thing. So what they want to be able to do is create a fast lane on the internet so that, for example, a company's videos will load faster or the download speeds will be faster from that particular site. Whereas other companies who don't pay will be relegated to a slower lane. And what will end up happening is you'll be on the internet one day and you'll go to one video site, let's say, to watch a video, and it won't be operating that quickly because that company is operating in the slow lane. And you'll hear, oh, there's this other site that perhaps is affiliated with Comcast, and you'll hear from your friend that the videos on that site work well, so you'll go to that site. That's the idea of this fast lane. Now, it's from a business perspective, it makes a lot of sense because you want to be able to charge money to people who are using the services the most and where there's the potential, most potential for audience. But at the same time, I think it was Senator Elizabeth Warren who said, we know that whoever's going to have the next big idea out there is going to need to get online to do it. And we want to make sure that those people who don't have the lots of money to pay Comcast for the fast lane, that they can still get their ideas out there, that they can still participate. I mean, I'm talking about accessing video in sort of a commercial space. But what if we were talking about a political campaign where you have one political figure who has lots of money to spend on this fast lane, and then you have another political figure who is an independent and just trying to get their voice into the conversation, and the videos on their site can't load at all because they're in the slow lane. So that sort of takes it to a different level where you can see how this has bigger implications than just about the future of economic policy.
Jonathan Obar is our guest here on Current State. Jonathan's an MSU visiting assistant professor at MSU and the associate director of the university's Quello Center for Telecommunication Management and Law. We're discussing net neutrality and last week's decision by the FCC, a proposal, I should say, by the FCC.
Right.
Jonathan, is the status quo still an option at this point? Can we still keep things the way they are, or do you detect that things are beginning to change permanently here?
Well, one thing that everyone should know is that we've never had network neutrality in its purest form. There have always been forms of network management taking place on the internet. And I mean, there are a variety of reasons that happens. I mean, the basic form of network management that everyone's familiar with is paying for, you know, a lot of access to the internet or a little, right? If you pay for a slower plan, it costs less. If you pay for a faster plan, it costs more. Now, that's different from the creation of a fast lane concept because for a variety of reasons. But so the point is that there already is a form of network management, and that's just one example that's taking place. There are those, especially who are very pro-network neutrality, who suggest that things could be better. And in some countries, like where I'm calling you from in Canada, some of the internet service providers are engaged in a process called throttling. Throttling is another form of network management where Let's say a company decides, an internet service provider decides, you know, those World of Warcraft players, they're really taking up a lot of our bandwidth. So we're going to figure out which users are playing World of Warcraft, and we're going to slow down their service selectively. And the same could be true of companies and how they interact with Netflix, for example. And these are things that we're just starting to learn about and how the ISPs are operating. So the way things are right now, I would say it's better in terms of an open internet than it could be should the FCC change its mind and allow for this fast lane concept to operate. But at the same time, I think things could also be better. There could be more transparency on the part of the ISPs so that we have a better sense of whether they are doing things like throttling or even something more concerning, which is called blocking, where companies can actually stop transmission from a specific site. These are things that are very concerning. Again, because the internet is so important for commercial reasons, for political reasons, et cetera.
Is this move more justifiable, in your view, since the ISPs are claiming that they will use profits they make to beef up their infrastructure? Does that better justify this?
Right. It's a very complicated question with a really complicated answer. it depends who you ask, I guess. In an ideal world, that the money that these companies would generate would be used to improve the internet. There are other system political policy instruments that are in place, like the Universal Service Plan, for example, that actually should be the primary mechanism by which the companies are generating income to improve the internet. So this would be sort of like an additional way on top of the fact that they already charge consumers quite a lot of money in the United States for access. You know, it's another way to get money. So I'm not really sure if we would see an internet like they have in Korea or in Japan or that sort of thing with this change, at least if we compare the way that the companies operating in the traditional media sphere treat their customers. But that's maybe a little bit of my political leanings showing through.
Well, taking a 5 mile up view for just a second, this net neutrality debate does have some uniquely American aspects to it. Tim Wu in The New Yorker just opined that it's about a new frontier, you know, equal and free access to online opportunities to pursue the American dream. And he argues the debate gets to the core of what kind of country we want to live in. It sounds like that resonates with you. Does that resonate with you?
Definitely. I mean, we talk about free markets all the time and the idea that the marketplace of ideas, if you have, the cream rises to the top, right? If you have a good idea and people can get out there, right? If you have the type of ice cream that people are going to like better than the competitors, right? You know, get people to taste that ice cream and then let them choose that ice cream over the competitors, right? It's all about having access to the marketplace, the opportunity to build that website, to build that app and plug it in and have people try it out. And now, of course, it's not just allowing people to try it out in the United States, but people all over the world can try out that ice cream or that app. And, I mean, that's one of the great things about the internet and the way that it evolves is that it's provided this opportunity for companies like Facebook and Google these were not the first players, you know, on the block. These were competitors who entered into the marketplace and had a competitive edge, and they beat out their competitors. I mean, imagine if Facebook couldn't have afforded whatever Mark Zuckerberg from his dorm room couldn't have afforded the fee to his internet service provider to get Facebook on.
Right.
We'd all still be using MySpace because, let's say, MySpace at the time was the established company and could at the time afford the fast lane, right? So
right.
That's the problem in a nutshell, because you've got potentially the ability to pay for speed affecting who gets to play.
Exactly. A fascinating discussion. We want to thank Jonathan Obar, an MSU visiting assistant professor and the associate director of the university's Quello Center for Telecommunication Management and Law. It's all about net neutrality. Thanks for joining us today, Jonathan.
Sure, and the last thing I'll just say very quickly, everyone should get involved in this conversation. If you have an opinion, go onto the FCC's website and make it heard. Check out the Electronic Frontier Foundation's website as well. They have a lot of really cool tools for getting involved.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Take care.